Welcome to Pulse.
My name is Ashley Bender, and I am the Digital Communications Associate for Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform. My job is to pulse the public, see what's happening, see where we are trending. And my co-host here is Michael Olson. He's our policy counsel, and he gives us the legislative pulse. He basically tells us what he's seeing on that side. We hope together we can give the full perspective of both what's happening, but also what's trending, and kind of give you a holistic view of reform in Oklahoma and where it could take us. So we're going to be doing some legislative session material where we're going to explain to you what some of these bills that could be coming up on your radar soon, why you should be watching, why you should care, and what they're all about. So we've got some experts here to talk to us today, and I will have them introduce themselves.
My name's Adam Maxey. I'm the Deputy State Director for Americans for Prosperity. I've been doing this job for about 5 years now. I want to take a second and talk about who AFP is and why we're involved here. You know, we're dedicated to the belief that every person has a set of gifts and an ability to contribute to society, you know, with whatever those gifts are. And I think that's especially important when we're talking about criminal justice reform and making sure that we have a system that empowers and provides opportunity for individuals while also protecting public safety. And so, you know, we've been involved in efforts at the Capitol over the last 7 or 8 years. And so I'm very happy to be here today.
Thank you so much. And Colleen.
Hi, my name is Colleen McCarty. I am an attorney here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I've been working in criminal justice reform since 2018 when I helped to commute the sentences of 30 women who were in on possession charges for sentences ranging anywhere from 5 years for simple possession to life. So those women are all out now, and I got really interested in this work, and I've been working with Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform as the policy counsel and the deputy director, and now contracting on helping some of this legislation get pushed through. Really excited to be here and provide my perspective and hopefully teach everybody a little bit about sentencing and sentencing reform and the things that we could see in Oklahoma that will radically change our current landscape. Excited to be here. Thanks.
Great. So as we kind of move into looking at what legislative session is, I'm going to kind of pivot over to Michael as this is more of his strong suit.
Yes, definitely. So a legislative session is the period of time when the legislature convenes for the purpose of lawmaking. In Oklahoma, that is according to Article 5, Section 26 of the Oklahoma Constitution. It begins on the first Monday in February and ends the last Friday in May. So that's around 109 calendar days this year. And that is the 22nd shortest time in the nation. So the reason legislative session, they bring bills forward that have been created either through legislative staffers or through outside parties lobbying for these bills. And they're put forward into committees. And the committee, a specific committee, has expertise in that area. And they will look at the bill and make any changes or decide that it should be passed. And then it's put onto the floor. And then it goes through a similar process in the other chamber of the legislature. So right now is such a key time to be engaged because these lawmakers need to hear the pulse of their constituents. And for bills to gain momentum, it's really important for the public to be educated on these bills at this point in time in particular. So that's just a brief overview of legislative session.
That's great. I don't know if it's as shocking to anyone else as it was to me, but there was 2,300 bills that were put forth. I know that some of these are shell bills, which will mean more to some people listening than to other, but is that shocking to anyone else that there were 2,300 bills that have to be kind of looked at in some form or facet?
That's pretty normal, especially in Oklahoma. We run what's called a two-year session. So a lot of those are carryover bills from last session that just didn't make it through committee or got stalled at some point in the process. So all the new bills that need to get filed for 2022, plus all the carryover from 2021, that doesn't surprise me at all. But yeah, it's a lot.
Like Colleen said, that's about average for what you're going to see year to year in Oklahoma. But but it's certainly a daunting amount of legislation for those of us involved or members or anyone interested in the process, really, to review, to take in, to understand, to be able to speak intelligently about and move forward and advocate for, against, or, you know, even prioritize their advocacy through that much legislation. So it's definitely, you know, when we go on those, I think he said what's it amounts to about 109 calendar days here this year, it is, it can be all consuming. It is a sprint and it takes a lot of people to get things done. You know, you mentioned, you know, constituents needing to contact their lawmakers. You know, that's absolutely what the core of AFP does, in connecting the grassroots and activists on these issues to their lawmakers to help drive positive change. And so it's certainly a lot to look for, and a lot falls on the prioritization of these bills and what the legislature and the legislative leadership chooses to make a priority for the session.
Right. So looking here at SB 1646, what is SB 1646?
It has kind of a long story behind it, but the short answer is that it is a felony classification system that provides standardized sentencing across all felonies in Oklahoma and standardized fines. Currently in Oklahoma law, because of the way we've structured our legislation in our legislative sessions, every single crime, if you ever want to amend it, it has to be done as a separate bill because they're all in separate statutes are scattered across multiple different chapters. This kind of has created what I call like a Frankenstein monster of sentencing, where you can have very similar types of conduct that have extremely varied ranges of sentencing. You have anything in statute from 1 to 4 years to 4 to life to 25 to life for different types of criminal conduct. And it really prevents any type of standardization across counties for similar conduct. So what we see on the ground is people getting charged with maybe even the same crime in Oklahoma County and, let's say, Garvin County, but their sentence could be vastly different. And that would be depending on any number of factors, whether or not they went to a jury, whether or not they got a plea deal. Of course, those factors have to be considered, but even if they went through the same exact process, they could still be getting extremely varying lengths of time. So what this does is it puts forward a grid system, which is similar to many other states that have gone through significant sentencing reform. And it allows for every single felony to be put into a class. And the classes are going from the lowest to the highest in severity of length of sentence, but also, I would say, in criminal conduct. So the Y class, for example, is the highest class. It is the murder class, right? Like the most serious and offensive conduct that a person can do, that's going to be in the Y class, all the way down to, I think the lowest one is D4. And that would be something like if you go to a pawn shop and you say you own the thing in the pawn shop, but you didn't really have ownership in the thing. So like something pretty much what we would consider a pretty minor felony. So it takes all that conduct, it categorizes it, and it gives standardized sentencing across all of those different felonies. In Oklahoma, we have 651 felonies on the books, I believe. So it's a very long bill, which is causing a lot of intimidation from lawmakers and from citizens that are just like, I can't read all this. I don't know what all this means. But it can be pretty simplified by looking at the visual representation, which is just the grid. There's minimums added if you have a prior felony on some of the more serious classes, and then a higher minimum if you have a prior violent felony or more than one nonviolent felony in your history.
If I could hop in there, I think specifically talking about the length of the bill, I think the backstory is important to understand why the bill is so large and why so many trees have sacrificed their hard work to make this bill. Our felony system is 114 years worth of legislative enactments and pronouncements. 114 years. In 1907, we became a state. 2021, we sit here now. And all that time, felonies have been created, some by thoughtful consideration, some through emotion, scattered all throughout our statutes. And like Colleen said, really created a Frankenstein as they sit, which in turn leads to unfortunate, unequal application of justice. So when these things are this wild and crazy, you can't standardize anything to do with how long a sentence gets, what law means, what is the rule of law in Oklahoma, and how much it costs or any predictability for the Department of Corrections to carry out the sentence and do their job as well. You know, we go back, we knew this was a problem, and the legislature 4 years ago in 2018 passed a law that created a council of experts appointed for a cross-section of law enforcement, prosecutors, legislators, chambers of commerce, public defenders, everyone who really touches it. 20-something experts sat in a room and came up with the classification system. And that is how, that is the grid, the classification used in Senate Bill 1646. I think it's important when the bill is talked about and people ask questions about how a certain crime ended up in a certain place, because it was very hard work to do that. I mean, it was a mess of statute that we're attempting to clean up. That was done by experts, prosecutors, law enforcement. Anyone and everyone on that council had a hand in putting these crimes in the classifications, like Colleen mentioned, from the Y1 to the, I believe it's D4, right? And so this is where we sit now. That council produced its final report and recommendations in December of 2021. And Senator Rader's bill, Senate Bill 1646 by Dave Rader from Tulsa, takes that classification system and takes the high-end sentence ranges offered by the council, removes the minimum sentences from there, but just like the First Step Act did that Congress passed several years ago, removed that also removed a lot of minimum sentences as well. And then it has an appropriate enhancement structure so you don't see a situation where somebody forges a check and gets 15 or 25 years. I think it's important to understand the necessity for how large this bill is. The length of the bill is commensurate with the size of the task. And I think that shouldn't be lost on anyone and what we're trying to accomplish here.
So you guys are talking about how, you know, this has been on the legislators' radar and how it's kind of been an issue that they've been preparing to fix. But has it been something that we've seen public support for as well? Would you say that Oklahomans in general have kind of had a pulse on this too, outside of course, the affected families? But would you say even the general public, have you seen anything like that?
Criminal justice reform is a difficult issue generally, because the people who are being directly impacted are often not heard or able to be heard by the general public. And that's one of the things that Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform has tried to do, is change the narrative and say that this system impacts all of us. And one of the ways it impacts all of us is through cost. And another one of the ways is by the economy. And so I think that when we start talking about housing people, and as Adam was saying, we have to understand the current state right now. If somebody has a sentence for a crime that's over 5 years, the first baseline is 5 years, and they commit another crime, the range of that, no matter what the felony is, goes from 0 to 7, for example, to 2 to life, or 4 to life if you have 2 crimes or more in your past. And so that's pretty much indeterminate, what we would call indeterminate sentencing for a very wide range of felony conduct. And so what we have seen is our incarceration in Oklahoma has gone through the roof. I think it's increased something like 1,000% since the 1970s in Oklahoma. And then we also have started to see the price tag go up for every single person that's incarcerated. It's on average about $20,000 per person per year. And so when you start seeing the sticker shock of having people incarcerated for very long periods for low-level felony conduct, when other states are putting people behind bars maybe for only 5 years for the same amount of conduct, then the general public, yeah, actually, they start to say, what is happening here? Like, why am I spending this amount of money on incarceration and almost nothing on diversion or almost nothing on treatment? I'm not getting the outcomes I want. I'm spending through the nose for that. You know, even restaurants and manufacturing and what we would call blue collar work, we don't have any type of people that can come and do that work now because so many people have felony backgrounds and those are getting screened. And so this, we have gotten to the point in Oklahoma where we have seen this issue that has been such a difficult issue to talk about become a public issue because it's impacting so many other areas of our lives. And so what 1646 is attempting to do is bring some reason and some measure back into the criminal justice system so that it's not starting to spill over and impact those other areas of our lives.
I think the other point, Colleen, is it costs taxpayers a truckload of money to house this many individuals in state custody. Like, there's no other way to put it. Like, it is an absolute drain on our state budget to house this many folks for periods of time that are too long. The punishment doesn't fit the crime at this point. And now not only are those the families that are torn apart by it, all of the ramifications there at DHS and everywhere else in those communities. You go back to general revenue and all of the taxpaying Oklahomans whose money, if you polled them, would say, I'd rather it be spent on roads and schools, tax cuts, or something given back to me, or something of more benefit than us housing someone in state custody for way too long for you name the crime in the current system that carries a penalty that doesn't fit the crime. It's an absolute must for a state to have this system, to have a prison system, to appropriate dollars and do that. But it's not one that everyone looks forward to. It's not one where we want to see this much of the state budget committed to this when it could be used for those other things or expanding treatment options or following what we know research-based, evidence-based has showed us what works in actually how to reduce crime for some of these things that are driven by other factors. One more point on the prison population. I found this out recently. It's pretty astonishing. If Oklahoma's general population had increased at the same rate as our incarcerated population from 1980 to 2021, we would have about 8.5 million people here in the state of Oklahoma. That's like saying Enid and McAllister are also now the size of Oklahoma City and Tulsa, and then put us at number 13 in the country in total population. It would be a completely different landscape if our regular population increased at the same rate our incarcerated population has over the last 40 years. It's pretty astounding to think about how disproportionate that is to our other population.
That is astonishing numbers. The numbers I think that we published on that 639 per 100,000 people in Oklahoma were incarcerated. That was basically our incarceration rate. I know that you guys have been talking about, it's not just that we have more people in the carceral system, but it's also for longer. We were also showing, our data was showing that 70 to 79% longer sentences are coming out for drug and property crimes in Oklahoma than surrounding states. That impact is felt, of course, across the states and even surrounding states, of course, as well. But that brings us to more the nitty-gritty of why this reform is necessary. So we've kind of got into the budgets, but do we know any more specifics of like how it will affect our budget?
I want to clarify here to everyone listening, the E word is something I try to stay away from. So I will say I am not an expert. I have a lot of smart people around me.
Specialist.
Thank you. Some of the numbers we've seen is Senate Bill 1646, over 10 years at the bare minimum, where these are very conservative estimates, because nobody wants to overpromise and underdeliver, especially when we're trying to budget, look forward, find ways to best use these dollars. $16.8 million, almost $17 million at the bare minimum. This is over 10 years, would save us just that in the prison population, what we're spending now. That number is based on the fact that everyone who would receive a sword or sentence under 1646 did not have any other health conditions or anything else that needed to be cared for that raises the cost of incarceration for someone. So there's that number, okay? What you have to understand is how these things compound. That's like straight state savings that we could count on from our current levels. But of those, you know, roughly 900 to 1,000 individuals who over time essentially, you know, averaged out over 10 years, a reduction in those beds. When we create more taxpayers instead of tax gatherers, that's $32 million back into the economy that we look at too. So now you have the sales tax collections, the income tax collections, and all those other things. These factors compound on each other for how much, you know, we could save or communities in the state budget could have at play to spend on other things like diversion programs.
So that kind of looks at the finances, but the other part that I do want to circle back to, Colleen, that you brought up that's so important is the family impacts as well. There are so many families. We get the pleasure of working with many of them here at Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform and trying to give them education and resources, and sometimes even just a listening ear, as so many families are impacted. But what would the impact of SB 1646 look like in the family aspect, Colleen?
I am going through some of my recent research that we published and discussed in the interim study. Mark Lawson requested an interim study last fall to the Committee on Children and Families that discussed the cost of incarceration to Oklahoma families. So when we talk about the $20,000 that taxpayers pay to house people in prison, that does not include any of the incidental costs that families themselves are required and have to pay in order to stay connected and keep their loved one who's in prison in clothing and make sure they have soap and other types of things. We did some research on the costs of incarceration that the families have to bear. And that takes into account driving for visits, jail calls, anything from when the person is originally arrested and if they're housed in a jail all the way through when they get released. Depending on how long the person is in and how many children they have, things like that, there are a ton of variables. But one of the most startling numbers that came out of that was that an individual who would be incarcerated for 20 years in Oklahoma with two children in DHS custody would cost the family and the taxpayers an additional $20,000 per year for each child in DHS. The numbers on that were over $1 million for one individual, and that's not counting the costs to the taxpayers to incarcerate. This problem is a cross-sectional problem. It's not just a siloed problem that we look at the numbers to pay to incarcerate someone, and that's the only cost we're going to see. We really need to start looking at it from a holistic perspective where we start calculating the incidental costs across every area. Because if we're not counting how much these low-income, often very low-income families, often grandparents who are on disability, are paying to take care of their loved ones' children while they're incarcerated. I mean, these are all societal costs that could be avoided if we were being more judicious with our resources and we were paying for people to get the treatment and the therapy that they need so that they don't fall into criminal activity. If we were being more proactive, we could actually save an untold amount of money in these other areas.
That gives me a place to put in a shameless plug for our TikTok. Mike and I work tirelessly putting TikTok content out, and something that we've touched on a lot lately and something that ends up being an uncomfortable conversation in Oklahoma is kind of the cross-section of race and poverty and how it affects crime. And so I'm not going to spoil it because I want everyone to go look at our TikTok, but please do go look at that. Mike also has a phenomenal blog piece up that we reference a lot in that video as well that kind of takes into account things compound onto each other. It's not just the money, it's the families, but it's also the long-term effects and stacks on top of each other. But we're talking about how this has been on legislators' mind for some time. Are there any other pieces of legislation up right now that does something similar or that should be on our radar as well?
I'll jump in here. Senate Bill 1590 is a bill authored by Senator Daryl Weaver. After Senator Shaw was defeated, who was the original appointee to the council by the Senate, Senator Weaver took over that post, and he dedicated some of his time outside of session to attend these meetings and to be a part of this council as they use their expertise to classify these crimes. When the council was directed into existence, the bill gave them four criteria, and then it said at the end, you need to be cognizant of what this will do to reduce or hold neutral the prison population. It has to do that. And keep in mind how much this is going to cost taxpayers. The council, when they came to recommend their sentences, decided the way we're going to reduce or hold neutral the population is to take all of the YA123 crimes that have been dubbed the 85% crimes, crimes where you must serve 85% of your sentence because they are so violent and heinous that we need you to be in prison for that. Those are, forgive me, I'll try not to go too deep into this. That's first degree murder, first degree rape, shooting with intent to kill. Those are the crimes we're talking about. A lot of those, not everyone I just mentioned, because there are in some separate categories that first degree murder, for instance, is a Y crime and did not change. But some of those 85% crimes, they took and lowered that to 75%. Those are huge drivers of our incarceration. Those are the reason we have a prison system. They took those crimes down and then brought penalties up for some of the lesser crimes, some of the lower level crimes that people may need some rehab or some other helps or other factors contributing to that behavior there. They did that. Well, Senate Bill 1590, all it does is takes the classifications set forth by the council and put it in the current statute. It doesn't take the sentence recommendations made by the council and put them in a statute. It really doesn't do anything other than take this current sentencing structure that has ballooned our prison population to its current state, which we've talked about, and just assigns it a letter and a number, I guess, for the heck of it, because that doesn't do anything. That bill is all hat and no cattle. And anybody who says otherwise is not being truthful with you when it comes to the charge of Senate Bill 1080, current law in Oklahoma, and what that council was supposed to do.
Can I just jump in with another metaphor, because we love our metaphors in the Capitol? All hat, no cattle. Also, I heard a lawmaker say the other day that SB 1590 rearranges the deck chairs on the Titanic. I feel like that's like the best metaphor I've heard for it, because it just places things in different boxes, but there's no point to even creating the boxes if you're not going to standardize the sentencing and have some reductions on these insane ranges. We will just be continuing to grow our prison population with new fancy class names into oblivion with SB 1590.
In SB 1590, if I have forged a check at some point in my life, I made the bad decision to do that, and I have that prior offense, and something else happens, all of a sudden I have life. It's a poor attempt to put lipstick on a pig and tell us that we've done something here, unfortunately. So that's juxtaposed to Senate Bill 1646, which takes the best part of the council's work, the hard work they did to go through 114 years worth of crime, and put them in categories where they were next to similar or appropriate crimes in those categories, and then takes those sentence ranges and does something with them that will accomplish the charge of Senate Bill 1080 to lower or maintain the prison population and save taxpayer dollars all at once. I think it's very important that we understand when talking about sentence classification, how the building works. We talked about this a little bit before. There's one of those things, you know, the principle of the Overton window. This is our shot. You can't do this once and then come back and say, let's change the sentences on them next year. There are too many things at play, too many things that can go awry, too many things that can be missed. The opportunity to do this is now with Senator Rader's 1646 to take the classifications of the crimes, adjust sentences appropriately and responsibly, and go forward with a system that protects public safety, protects victims, respects the individual's rights and dignity, and use it to go forth like 36 other states have in a felony classification system, and work our way out of the bottom of this statistic that continually thrown around and thrown around and thrown around, that we are by far and away one of the largest incarcerators on the globe.
Yeah, I believe held the top spot for incarceration for 30 plus years for some groups like women. Can't stress enough that it's so important to get involved. And what does it look like to get involved? So say you're someone listening to this podcast and you're thinking, you know, okay, well, I want to make sure that the right bill moves forward to make an impact. What should people be doing? What can they do?
What I would recommend people do if they're just kind of interested in this issue, but they're not a huge advocate or they're not very familiar with the process, is they can go to the Oklahoma Policy Institute's website and they can look up who their senator is and who their House representative is in the state. So this is a state bill. It's happening in the state legislature. Your national Congress person is they won't be able to do anything about it. Don't look at your national reps, look at your state reps, and you find out who they are. That's going to go based off of your address. And you can either call or write them and tell them which bills you support, which ones you hope that they will vote yes on when they come up. If they're in a committee where this bill will appear, they can vote on it in the committee and they can vote for it on the floor, or they can just vote for it on the floor if they're not on one of the committees. So that's the best thing you can do at this point in the process. There might be some more activist type of things you could do later in session. If we move the bill out of committee and to the floor, we might have like a day of action or something like that up at the Capitol that you could participate in. But for now, I think they just need to hear your voice. It's really important to tell them why this issue is important to you. If there's a personal connection, if you have a loved one incarcerated, they would like to hear about that. But also just as a citizen, why is this issue important to you? Are you embarrassed that we're high up in the rankings? You don't want your money going towards incarcerating people and not treating them, or whatever your answer for why this issue is important to you. Make sure you include that in your communication to your lawmakers.
I will take your shameless plug of your TikTok, and I will raise you a shameless plug for Americans for Prosperity and our grassroots engagements directors and their field offices in Oklahoma City and Tulsa. We have two individuals on staff that the entire job is to help activists, citizens, interested parties get in contact with their government, use their First Amendment right to redress their government and advocate their positions to their elected officials. I'm sure there will be some sort of contact info along with this episode somewhere. And if you follow that, I can absolutely put you in touch with those individuals, depending on where you're at. Like I said, offices in Oklahoma City and Tulsa, and their full-time job is to help you do that, because it's important that lawmakers hear from their constituents and drive that change. And telling your why and using your story and your voice is extremely important in the process.
I also think, of course, I'm going to say this because I'm the digital communications associate and I am our youngest person on staff, but I think it's important also, especially for people who are college students, who are recently, even high school students who are getting engaged in these issues, to know that your voice matters just as much. Listen to these podcasts, get involved online, you know, get educated, because I think that for me personally was what held me back before I was doing this as a full-time job. You know, it's daunting to get into legislation, into, I don't know if we said it was lengthy, but it's 1,000 pages. And, you know, seeing something like that, it's easy to shy away from it. So engage with us on social media. We have a bunch of partners, our sister organization as well, Okay Justice Action as well. We think the number one thing is to be educated, which is the purpose of this episode in the end, is to educate. You know, here are the real benefits and here are the real people that we can help and the real impact that we can make. If anyone has anything that they'd like to add, any questions, any last minute thoughts, and then I have a fun pop question everyone can get anxious about until then, but if anyone has any parting thoughts on this subject?
I have one thing I'd like to just stress really quickly. Oklahomans paid for a 22-member council to convene over 3 years about 14 times. Oklahomans have paid Senate staff and legislators to go back and forth and write this bill. Oklahomans own what happens out of this process. We deserve a sentencing structure that reflects the purpose of SB 1098, which was the bill written in 2018 that requires the council to either maintain or reduce incarceration. We deserve a structure that saves money. We deserve a structure that prioritizes diversion and prioritizes addiction services. We paid for that. Like, if you went to the store and you bought something and they just never brought it out to you, you go and you order something, they just never bring it to you. Wouldn't you be upset if you didn't get what you paid for? We are in a situation right now where we're getting dangerously close to not getting anything for all of the work that we've paid for. And I think people deserve to know about that. And they deserve to be upset about that. And they deserve to ask for a system, even if it's scary, even if you have to be brave to do it. We deserve legislators who will be brave. It's time. It's past time. Just try to stress that we deserve what we paid for, and I hope that we get it.
Colleen, I think we've all been in a situation where you order something at a restaurant and you'd like to get what you paid for. But a couple of things I'd like to say, you know, in closing, again, I really appreciate you guys having me on here. Something that a word that gets tossed around a lot. I'm a sixth generation Oklahoman. I love this place. I spent a couple of years away from here after college and realized I wanted to come home to Oklahoma. It's home to me. I believe in Oklahoma. I believe in its people. I believe in the Oklahoma standard. And I refuse to believe that my fellow Oklahomans are magically more violent or dangerous or a danger to others, their neighbors, just because they live within our borders. And that's something that's implied a lot in these arguments, that we just have to do it this way. It's the way it's always been done. I reject that outright. We are great people. Nothing magic happens when you cross over on I-40 into Oklahoma and that all of a sudden you're a more dangerous person. I want that to be said. And I want to say thank you to all the legislators involved in this who are not acting on emotion, but are looking at this in a practical way to find better solutions for generations of Oklahomans to come for a more fair and balanced system that respects the rule of law and doesn't put anyone's liberty at risk because things are all over the place. And the government can just reach and grab from anywhere and lock someone up for a long time. Particularly Senator Dave Rader, who has done a phenomenal job. And I want to thank Senator Pro Tem Treat, who authored Senate Bill 1098, started this whole process. Both are men with great vision for where this state needs to go. And I appreciate them taking this issue on and their attempt to set a better course for the future.
I think that's definitely important. Also, I think legislators sometimes feel like just figureheads, you know, just these people off at the Capitol doing things. So it's nice to remember that they are people who have strong values and are doing this because they believe it's right. And because they, like you said, they have a vision and they have a goal and they want Oklahoma to be better just as much as all of the general public and all of us want Oklahoma to be better as well. Politics aside, it's about Oklahomans at the end of the day, which is a great reminder. I do have a surprise question. I'm sure everyone's so happy. I think this is going to be right in Adam's wheelhouse the most, but I think everyone might have an answer. I think that there are a lot of bills that come up and you know, 2,300 bills, there's a lot that get a little strange. What is the strangest, weirdest, silliest bill you have seen any of you come up in the legislature?
I'm going to go ahead and say it's the Bigfoot one. So last session, I believe it was JJ, Adam, if I'm wrong, please help me. But JJ Humphrey ran a bill to allow people to get hunting licenses to hunt Bigfoot. If you caught him, you got some type of a reward or something of that nature. And he went viral for it. And I think they even came and filmed like an episode of a reality show about this. I don't know if it passed or not. It was under the animal and wildlife hunting licenses section, but it was clearly one of those bills that you've just put out there to get news coverage and attention for. But that's probably the weirdest one. But I'm going to go ahead and also say that almost every single one that I read is pretty ridiculous. I mean, there may be like one out of 50 that I'm like, oh, okay, that's actually going to do some good. But a lot of the bills that get filed are nominal in nature. They seek not to create change, but just to put someone's name on something. And so, yeah, that's just my perspective though.
I think the Bigfoot bill was a phenomenal marketing plug for Representative Humphrey's district. I think it accomplished its purpose. I think it was fun. And if you haven't been to Representative Humphrey's district, you should go down there because it's a very beautiful part of the state. As an avid hunter, I've never come across Bigfoot down there. I don't expect to, but I thought that bill was a lot of fun. But as an advocate for limited government, I have to kind of echo what Colleen said. The less they do, the better in most cases. A lot of these things that come up are ideas that should just be put off, probably aren't the government's place, or, you know, are this or that, or just laden with special interests that the public's time could be served considering other things.
I would like to say an honorable mention, I think, to the Lincoln Riley Highway, which if we have any sports fans who tune into us, they will have feelings of pride. I think that was Senator Coleman put up a tiny itty bitty part of State Highway 325 that he found and said basically he found the tiniest section of the most desolate of highways to pay tribute to Coach Riley's exit from Oklahoma football.
A couple of years ago, I think I was still in law school, but there was a law out of Tulsa that would allow students to self-apply sunscreen. And I guess it just sounds ridiculous, but it did have a legitimate reason because I guess sunscreen is an FDA-approved drug and like technically you need a nurse to apply an FDA-approved drug. They just allowed students to put on their own sunscreen.
Wow. I'm speechless for a moment just thinking about the hoops we jumped through. Wow.
Okay. Actually, your outro music should be that song from the 90s that's called like Put On Your Sunscreen. It's like this motivational speech by this guy over some music, but it was like played at every graduation in the 90s.
I don't want to baby myself here, but I don't know if I was alive here. I'm sure you don't know what I'm talking about. I'm not sure if I was a conscious being quite yet. I do want to echo everything that Adam said before in his final remarks. Thank you both to Adam and to Colleen and Mike as well. It's so important for us to have these conversations. Again, I just really want to reiterate that Oklahomans for Criminal Justice Reform is here to bring education. We know a lot of these conversations can be kind of uncomfortable, especially like we started off with, this has been 100 years in the making. A lot of things are just kind of ingrained into our state. But that doesn't mean that we can't make our state better. We're here to learn. We're all learning. We're all getting better. And so that's why we are having these. I strongly encourage people to reach out and continue these conversations, especially if you don't agree with us. I think at OCJR, we firmly believe that those are where we have the best conversations, is people who might read and think, you know what, I think you're missing something. We want all perspectives and we want to keep moving forward and make Oklahoma better. We hope that you come back for more episodes with us.